Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the newest LU Q&A, where we, the members of Slapdash Studios, answer questions that have been submitted to us about the podcast and the characters therein. Let's go around the table and say hi to everybody, starting with...
Sam Frost, playing Arvid Ulfmund, the Drubarb.
Michael Loving, I play Harathax, the Dragonborn Warlock.
Hi, Alante. I play Chris Sagran, the human crystalline sorcerer and creation bard.
And I'm Zachary Barkas, Artyom Volkov, the cleric of Sunlight and Suffering, and I'm also the technical director for Slapdash Studios.
And I'm Law. I'm the dungeon master and the creative director of Slapdash Studios, and I've got some questions in front of me, and I'm just going to go around and we'll do some kind of roundtable discussion.
Ooh.
So the first one is from Izzy Boshi. Gotta love them.
Classic.
Fizzy Boshi.
How do players get themselves into character? Is there a single image, process, or idea that helps you get focused in the headspace to inhabit your alter ego? And I figure since we just did a fun little live panel, this is a good follow-up question because our minds are in that area.
Don't gesture at me.
I'm sorry. Fine, I'll start.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, I've always been pretty comfortable with the Russian accent, which is like 90% of what Artyom is. I think my biggest fear usually when I'm coming into the character is whether or not I'm going to be able to deliver the jokes and the lines effectively. So, I mean, for me, I don't really do a lot for getting in character. I just try to watch funny things the night before so that I'm primed for it.
Hmm.
I will say, and I had somebody, a friend of mine, ask me this because he turned me on to it. He turned me on to Life of Boris, which is a particularly funny, if somewhat sometimes problematic, YouTube channel. And his accent is very thick and very rich and very deep, and I love it. And so sometimes if I'm slipping a little bit in my accent, or if I've noticed that the recordings haven't been going great, I'll watch a couple of episodes of that and be like, okay, yeah, this works.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm ready now. So, yes, the laughs.
yes, comedy jokes.
I do a lot of in the car vocal warm-ups before I come on the way. And then there's a big piece of it, which is like, what did I say? Oh, yeah. Clearing my mind and entering the himbo space.
The himbosphere.
The himbosphere.
I just figure up like in this very like thoughtful position. Just yes, the himbo sphere,
the himbo zone.
Also good.
So I do that, and then the third piece that I think really helps me is now that I have some art, looking at the art for character inspiration, looking at it and being like, yes, that's the boy that I am. I am that boy, and just like. You know, seeing his beautiful face there makes me feel I am the Arvid.
I love the concept. Just like you're just staring at this picture and being like, get stupid, baby. Get done. Here we go.
There's a really great Venn diagram online, and it is like the himbo Venn diagram. And the three categories are, you know, like buff, manly, dumb, and genuinely good natured. Mm-hmm. And in the center, it's Kronk from Emperor's New Groove.
Can I just say buff manly is a great name for somebody?
Hi, I'm Buff Manly.
That is a good burlesque name.
It is.
That would be
it. Especially if you're a really skinny guy.
I typically on the drive here because I drive farther than anybody else does. Although it's only 30 minutes now. It's not an hour like
just globally,
it was.
You drive more than anyone
yeah,
else.
Yeah, anyone else. Yes. I usually listen to an episode of the LUQ on my way. And typically because I don't have, because usually we're ahead of where we've recorded versus what we've released. It's an episode that's a little bit farther back. And so not only does it kind of remind me of what happened a little while back, not necessarily last recording session, but sometimes the one before it. And also just listening to my character voice and everyone else. And it gives me things to think about, like, oh yeah, this was going on. And I can kind of bring that up when we're recording to keep things tied together over the course of the show.
And that's good.
Nolente?
Oh yeah. You know, music's super important to me in general. I think a thing that it does for me is it helps me like turn off that super crazy analytical brain and just kind of lets me go into flow state. So finding that...
So for two people, get stupid is this.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's so easy to like sit here and be like, oh, I fucked that up. Instead, you're like, all right, I might have fucked that up, but we're moving on, you know? Yeah. So
you could say get dumb, but isn't that also what the ascetic monks always do?
It is. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It's emptying your mind.
Definitely empty your mind. And also it helps like... I try to find music that matches the emotion that, you know, Chris is in or in relation to another, you know, this.
So right now it's just a lot of Linkin Park.
I fucking love Linkin Park. Don't even get me started. And yes, I fucking love Linkin Park. Don't even. Anyway. Yeah, I think that's important. And even finding songs in relationship to the other characters at the table is also an important thing to remember.
See, and I don't need to put myself in that dumb space because I'm always there. I exist perpetually in the Zen state of barely thinking but constantly acting.
Yes. You adopted the dumb space. I was born in it. For me, maybe different in at least LUQ because I'm doing various characters. When I was in animation school, the main thing that drove me was character design. That was my favorite. So I always have to picture a character in my head. If I can see them, then I can like hear their voice coming out of their mouth. So I'm always like drawing them in my brain when I create a new NPC or something. Nice. Or if you like show me a drawing of like a character from a D&D book, I'm like, ah, I got the voice.
Kind of like Sam looking at the picture is a thing that you do.
But
you visualize.
School. He went through school. He has the perfected form.
Yes.
Now, see, when I'm DMing, one thing I love to do is I like to just have conversations with myself as two different characters in the world, like two different NPCs. I'm just like, it's going to be this guy talking to this guy about this thing. And then I just have that conversation alone, which I guarantee if my neighbors can hear me through the floor, they're going to be very confused. Who is in his house?
I do that when I'm not DMing. I just do that walking around my house. Right. I don't know.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Should we worry about you?
Yeah. Probably.
Okay.
If we're not always worried about each other, like universally, I think we're in the wrong track.
Yeah.
But Elante's answer to that question kind of brought up this one. I feel like we've lightly touched on this, but this is a new take on the question. So from Evelet, it's what real world music genre would be each of the characters' favorite?
Yes. I love this question. Thank you. Start.
What?
Oh. Start it.
I mean, you kind of did touch on it. Like Chris State is... now more Linkin Parky, but I think in general he's much more of like, he's either like that chill step, like he wants that feeling like everybody's in a good place and wants to keep that going, or you know,
chill hop when, to study too,
huh? Mm. Yeah. Or he wants to go to that, you know, what am I gonna call this, like Alcarinide soul, you know? That just kind of like, I'm really deep in my emotions right now and I don't know what to do. Yeah.
So cry rock and chill hop.
I mean, I was going to be like Adele, but that's fine.
That's cool.
That's fine. For Harithax, I think there's probably a lot of like sort of more tribal, like trance music, like didgeridoo and stuff like that. Seems.
Yes. I want to see Harithax try to blast a didge.
Yeah. Like... Or like that 4D music, right? Like this is frequency like 277.
Right. Brr. Yeah.
I don't make music. I make soundscapes.
Right. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. Like justice, except less industrialized techno and more just.
It's like that Patton Oswalt bit with like a young group of trust fund students have done Tibetan shriek singing. Yeah.
But I think I said this in the Discord too. I think Harithax would have a soft spot for like show tunes. Like when I think Harithax,
really?
Like when I think of Harithax like singing, it's usually a Disney villain song of some kind. Like
I love that.
Poor Unfortunate Souls by Ursula, yes. Or the Shadow Man song from Princess and the Frog.
I was, man. Literally anything Dr. Facilier does, I'm like, that's artifacts right there.
Right, exactly. So I'm like
favorite villain ever, by the way.
He's one of my top ones. For sure.
Even like Jafar's reprise of Prince Ali, I'm like, yeah, I think Harthax is like Disney villain songs. It's like Harthax is like subgenre. Yeah.
I like it. So it's like world music all day, but then like in the shower, it's Bette Midler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I fucking love this.
Bluegrass folk and like specifically the Dropkick Murphys, I think.
I would have said Yallerhorn, but yeah, okay.
Oh, Yallerhorn, yeah, okay. I mean, that's part of the folk, you know, bluegrass plus folk plus,
That is the perfect description of Yallerhorn. Bluegrass plus folk. Nope. Don't
two different
listen
things.
To this
There's
thinking
a comma,
that.
not a true plus sign. There we right. go.
It might even be a semicolon.
like a squiggly equals, you know, like this is similar to. In the zone,
YouTube would suggest it.
So, like for Artyom, I mean, it's obvious to think that maybe something like Wardruna or some like kind of heavier, like creepy, dark music. But that's just the question is not whether something is associated with that character, but what their favorite genre would be. And without question, for Artyom, it would be pop music. It would be like super generic Katy Perry, fucking like the most simplified, good sounding shit.
Really? Not like, you know, 90s pop when like Evanescence was super huge.
No,
it's,
no, like,
it's just Taylor Swift all day.
It's whatever is currently playing. He would just be standing there going, this is good music.
Yeah.
And then he would nod his head, not bopping with the music, but he would just be agreeing with what he's hearing.
Can you give an in character that's a bop, please?
That is a bop.
Yay!
Am I getting this right? A bop?
Cool. Right, whatever nice makes him appear the most normal.
How you been? I can show you incredible things.
Because, baby, you are firework.
Yes.
I think you need to drop that line at some point.
God. I guess Maven probably just listens to like NPR.
Yeah.
Really?
Just like jazz radio.
I was going to say, I could see jazz or classical, like orchestral. Like.
But what about when he needs to dance it out? Does he like put on some like Cher remixes or something? Or?
Oh my God.
Okay, wait. So I have a question, Law, for Maven. We know he's mentioned it before. Maven's not afraid to get down. Mm-hmm. What's really? Maven's bonin music?
Right. What's his party time good jams?
Yeah. Well, we know what he listens to. Yeah. What's his getting down?
I'm gonna go with ABBA.
Okay.
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 What specifically? Because there's a wide range of ABBA.
I think that's what makes it perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Oh.
Also, I heard recently that Fleetwood Mac is ABBA for straight people.
Holy shit.
And like, there's like tiny holes in the logic, but it also makes so much sense.
It is a very grabby sentence.
I loved hearing it and reading it. So here's a fun one. And I was just picturing this, like trying to see how you guys would answer. And it sounds fun to me. This one's from Darcy. How does the Mortal Dawn celebrate their birthdays?
Oh, what, me first?
Yeah, I'm gesturing.
I don't think I should go first.
No, you should, because it's such an anti-joke moment of like, he fucking like sits under the sun until he burns blisters.
He doesn't
lights himself as a candle on his own dark cake.
We've had
sorry.
He doesn't remember his birthday.
Oh wow.
He doesn't know when it was because they don't track that.
Yeah, I think that came up at
one. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, I think
I'm so sorry.
I think that came up at one point in the show. I think it got touched on.
I don't think he did, but I always knew from the moment I made the character he doesn't remember his birthday.
Yeah. I know you were saying like, why would I remember like how old I was? Like, why would I keep track of that? I think he did say that. Right?
Yeah, he's like hundreds of years old. So it's like to him, it's like I'm not gonna track this shit. Yeah, what does it matter?
I know Chris's birthday has come up on stream.
Yeah,
sort of.
It was our version of Christmas. What was it again?
Spirits Rest.
Yeah, Spirits Rest.
Yeah. Mm. Born at the height of Spirits Rest.
Yeah.
I think he laments it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, as a person who really doesn't know who they are, what they are, who has no control over his life until fairly recently, there's not really a whole lot to celebrate. So he's either like sad crying in his room or like off partying and trying to forget that it's the day.
This is a fucking bummer ass question.
He's just laying in his bed listening to Linkin Park.
But there's also those kids who like really resent Christmas because it's like right on their birthday and they're like, who gives a shit about my birthday? There's already Christmas happening.
I'm gonna go have a shower cry later.
Mm-hmm. What about Arvid?
No, you should go first, because mine's not going to be sad or forgetful.
All right. We'll end on a high note then. Yeah, Harithax's birthday is probably somewhat melancholy, because their parents were so old. Harithax's parents were so old, and they died when Harithax was only like 12. So, I mean, it's been... There were a lot of birthdays that they spent by themselves, and it's probably a little weird now to have people around on their birthday. And presumably, actually, at this point, because it's been an entire year in-game, all of our characters have had a birthday, but it didn't come up in play.
I will say that if for some reason Artyom was to celebrate a birthday, I'll tell you, he would probably sit down with one person and a bottle of drink of some kind and just get drunk, smoke, and talk. That would be, I think that's how he would want to do it, if he had to.
I like that. I like that a lot.
So, yeah. Just a bottle of scotch, a person that he likes and who he wants to talk to about something. He'd have like a topic in mind and he's like, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And like My Dinner with Andre or some shit like that, or any scene in Coffee and Cigarettes.
My Dinner with Artyom.
My Dinner with Artyom. Yeah. There we go. Well,
Harithax probably spends most of their day thinking about like their childhood and their parents and stuff and just kind of remembering their ancestors.
I'm gonna tell you right now that if I had to, like if I had to, I could probably record an hour of Artyom talking about different topics and like the flow of conversation with one person who just every once in a while gives a sentence or two.
So yeah, Arvid has actually also forgotten his birthdays since he's been with the LUQ, but that's mostly because I think in his culture, it's like the whole village celebrates a person and it's not to them to like come up and say, hey, it's my birthday. So like it's supposed to be a thing where you know everyone's birthday, but you may not remember your own. So normally he would just be greeted by his family, mostly the little kids who've made little presents, and they're like, yay, we're glad we're part of a tribe with you. You're a good person.
I love that so much.
Yeah. I kind of imagine like a communal sort of birthdays, like this is the group that was born when the snow was melting, so we're going to celebrate them.
A
right
seasonal
now.
Birthday for each group of people. Yeah. That's great.
That's good stuff.
So they don't have like a hard line calendar that they follow, but they know like what is happening in nature. Like, okay, beginning of summer is this group, middle of summer and harvest is this group. That seems neat to me.
I like that.
Logging that away as game canon.
Oh shit! We just got a legendary patron just now.
Yay!
Thank you,
new person.
Hopefully that was from the Idaho Con.
Yeah,
that'd be impressive.
We just did that. Well, another question that's kind of going to be for everyone, but I think it was directed as a DM question, is from Sir Bray of Wills. What does the daytime Nexus programming look like? So this is kind of a fun round of table. And I'm picturing, you know, I've had ideas in my head for a segment that was going to be very much like a daytime somewhere between The View and Oprah kind of thing, but great. Led by a lich. And like,
this, I would watch that.
This very like dominant feminine presence lich who is, you know, using dark magic, but also like giving away free curses and stuff. Like, I don't know.
I love that.
And now is this lich somebody that they treat their minions well? Are they nurturing?
Yeah, I think she's a very benevolent lich. And it might be called like lich please. I don't know. Like,
oh my god.
You get a canopic jar and you get a canopic jar and you get a canopic jar.
So I'm confused. Do you not want to be in the program or you do? Where does it fall on that spectrum?
Right, but there's also, you think like what's like the Jerry Springer of the D&D
yeah,
world?
Yeah.
Like half elf, who's the father kind of thing.
Oh, man. Well, there's got to be soap operas. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
soap
rich,
operas.
Heavy soap operas. There's got to be, like, one that's been going on since, like, maybe even, like, the moment the Nexus Enterprise started putting out Scry Crystals, the day they put it out, there was already one of these ready on, like, on the fly.
Totally. Like, as our plane turns or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
Ooh, finding old, like, abandoned churches, like, you know, we found the one to Solange, and just kind of making wild conjecture about what was practiced there. That'd be pretty cool.
Like the History Channel, like, yes. And it always comes back to like it was probably the Illithids or something like that coming in.
So
that's after like 9 p.m. the guy's like illicit.
Yeah. No, he's like illithid, and he does the face tentacles instead of yeah. So does the Nexus Enterprise, does it have multiple channels, or is it just one channel that you just, it's 24-hour programming?
I imagine their primary channel is just LUQ, but in order to fill more content and reach a broader audience, they have some other daytime
like Gitter Dungeon and stuff.
Yeah, there was a joke in there of like a home shopping network for like super late at night where they were buying like cursed swords and stuff like
right.
that.
I think Storm bought one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I just say though, if there was in real world, in here in our plane, if there was a soap opera set in a D&D universe with like all the same races and all the same magic and stuff like that, you would never pry me away from that sumbitch. Mm-hmm. I would always be watching it.
Isn't that what D&D podcasts basically are?
Basically, but I want more. I want the visual. I want that like that. What is it, like a 32
the smoky
frames?
Filter?
Yeah, smoky filter, 32 frames per second, like the whole crisp, creepy image.
Chris would want to be on that show so bad. I fucking know it.
Well, when Slapdash gets big enough.
Oh God.
And there was other daytime shows, like Artificer's Road Show was one.
Right,
like, yeah. Totally, after your morning cartoons are over, that's the kind of stuff that comes on. Oh, what kind of morning cartoons are there?
Oh my God.
Well, we've got Owlbear Man. That's kind of the world superhero figure.
Oh my God. I feel like maybe Morty inspired his own, like, Clifford
the Big Red Dog kind of thing.
Morty and Pals.
I'm guessing there's probably just Adventure Time, and it's just Adventure Time.
Just like, the same exact show. That makes sense. I could see that being interdimensional.
I feel like there's also an inappropriate Doctor Who with gay Yankees. I don't know.
I mean, I would say just in general, a plane walking Doctor Who almost definitely exists.
Some kind of sci-fi, yeah. There's probably The Office set at the LUQ headquarters.
Mm. Oh.
I'm also picturing just like a weird hour of silent puppetry that like wigs everyone out and kind of has a really impossible to follow story.
Late night TV would be gross and weird. I mean, look at Adult Swim and like, I mean, just watch Tim and Eric Awesome Show and now imagine a fantasy Tim and Eric. Like,
that's Tim and Eric, isn't it?
That's amazing.
I like that very much. So here's a question for the players. This is from Potato Coon. How willing are y'all as players to accept character death of your character? Would you push for a resurrection or just roll up a new one?
I've been waiting for it since day one. Oh my God, I've had so many close calls. I really, really, really thought I was going to get sucked into that fire plane.
Oh yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That was a close one.
I have been trying to be ready. It's often a problem for me in general in games where I get like, what the heck? I died. This isn't supposed to happen. My poor creature. I'm going to bury them. Not Black Leaf, you know, that kind of stuff. and so I have from day one been trying to plan how to deal with myself dying pretty much at the beginning of every fight. Do I have anxiety?
I mean, to be fair, you and Colleen both openly cried at the death of one of my NPCs in the past. So, like, let's
say.
Shout out to Colleen.
Yeah.
I have no problem with the idea of Harithax dying. There have been a couple moments where I've almost wished like that Harithax would have died in that moment because it would have been so just narratively just like of just this perfect moment to go. My only like concern over a character dying would be that it would happen at some bullshit meaningless time, like you're, you know, on the cart and the cart crashes and like I just get crit or something and
everybody wants their death to mean something,
right? Like for a narrative, like story focused D&D game, if it's a meaningful death in the game, totally chill with it. If it's some random mook one shots me and happens to get a lucky crit when I'm at low HP, I'd be pretty bummed out about that.
Yeah. Or even if it's like you don't go down in the blaze of battle, just like quietly off camera, Harithax passes of like colon infection or something.
He has a fucking like a cardiac dissection or whatever, and he just like his heart splits in half and he dies.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a pretty major bummer. Like, oh yeah, you know, Michael and his wife had another kid, and then we just wrote them out of the podcast and just killed Harithax off screen.
Oh, my turn? Crap. Oh. Well, me as a player, not really okay with it. I really like Chris a lot, and I really want to know what the hell is he? Like, let me know already. But at the same time, you know, realizing Chris is a weapon, so, and weapons break.
Yeah, that's fair.
Ooh.
D&D doesn't have weapon integrity, though, so.
No rules lying.
For me, honestly, I think our team could die for any reason, and I would be okay with it. I wouldn't want him to die, like, of dying, getting hit in a carriage or something like that.
Right.
But if he was killed by a mook or something, that's just how it goes. You know, life happens, life ends. And I think, though I wouldn't fight for a resurrection, I think if you guys pulled him out, the pathos that would generate of him being furious with you, that he, like, that was his moment, God chose him to die, and you pushed it, I think that would be such a good, like, thing.
I also like the idea of Artyom perhaps being like over sacrificial.
Oh, yeah.
Like ready to jump on the martyr stick too soon. Like the bill for restaurants too high. He's like, I've got this.
I mean, to be fair, there have been a lot of moments where I'm like needlessly putting myself in danger. That being said, I did actually have a moment where I thought about seriously leaving the show and I'd just roll another character if that was to happen. No spoilers, I guess, but if you're listening to this, you're probably ahead of it. But yeah, I mean, in one of the more recent chapters, he was actually seriously considering just staying on the Githyanki ship and just becoming a planeswalker kind of person. Mm-hmm. I should stop saying the term planeswalker. That's copywritten.
In that particular episode, I think also... Arvid was, what did we worked out, it was like 8 hit points away from instant death.
Yeah.
Mm.
You were almost dead.
Yeah, if you hadn't been giant aped, you would have been dunzo. Like, oh, gone, really? Dead, permanently. Yeah, because massive damage would have wiped them out completely.
Ooh. Yeah, that was a rough one.
That was the closest call I think we've had.
But if you guys had been, like, supportive of his decision to leave, I think Artyom would have left, and then I would have just rolled another character.
That's insane to think about, like...
I've never been a fan of the whole like death doesn't mean anything thing. Mm-hmm. Like to me, no matter what, in every one of my games, I kind of make a way for resurrection not to be something you can do because I hate it as a concept. I find it so vile and so undermining of the whole point of danger. Mm-hmm. You can't have stakes if you can just grab the guy's finger and he's alive again.
But can I reiterate, if anything happens to Morty, we will absolutely bring him back.
You'll sell the bar to bring him back.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I actually, if I can interject Law's questions with a question that I thought of for Law today on my way here.
You can. We're also going to end with a Q&A to each other.
Okay, yeah, but it's related to Morty.
Yeah.
When you introduced Morty to the group, did you expect that 90 episodes later we would still have Morty tagging along?
It was literally the villains had well-trained dire mastiffs.
Okay.
That was it. And you saved one, and it became your buddy. Aww. There was zero thinking that would become a pet.
Yeah, it's just one of those tropes that just comes up in like every D&D game.
It really does.
I love it. It's great. So here's one from Andrew. When did you know as a group that you were going to start a podcast?
Zach told me.
Right. Well, yeah, for 60% of the group, we auditioned for a podcast. And so it was pretty well established at that point that a podcast was going to occur.
Yep. For Law and I, there was a moment when I was making a meatball soup. And we were brainstorming ideas about stuff because I'd wanted to talk to him about the idea of doing a podcast a while. Yeah. And we knew we wanted to do something D&D. And one of the ideas that had stuck in my head from a long time ago was when I first heard about X-Crawl. And I thought that was such a cool idea. And that was when we started spitballing, like, what would that look like? What would it sound like for us? How would we make it different from every other thing we were dealing with?
Yeah, there was another session where we were at Holman's. And a lot of ideas started spitballing because I had always mentioned, like, there was a meme from a long time ago where I was talking about what if characters had sponsors from like companies
that
they like put on their shields and stuff, and it all kind of snowballed. But I'm going to add to this question, like, was there a moment in the show when we realized, like, this is the team? Because, like, you can go 4 episodes into something and be like, okay, well, this probably isn't going to play out that good. I'm going to add to that question, though. Was there a moment when we were all playing together when you realized, like, this is special. Like, this is something that I'm super excited to be in because it could have gone a few episodes and totally petered out.
Oh, I still want to go first.
Please.
It's kind of late into our podcasting, but the Dreading Cake for me was that moment. I was like, yeah, we're it. We're doing this.
Wow. That took a while for you.
We finally figured out our dynamic and we were playing out that in the game. Like, we were all mounted on Arvid, and I was doing the Mystic America wave. You were doing lights and stuff, and he just turned into a T-Rex. We were, like, actually working like a team.
If I remember correctly, that was, like, right after we did our first, like, brainstorming sit-down where we talked about characters and voices and everything. Like, that was, like, right around the time when we really dedicated to it. And that was also right when we did the new music and everything, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, that was
our anniversary special.
I was going to say Dreading Cake was, like, the one-year mark, wasn't it?
I would
it?
Like yeah. everyone to note that it has never been called the Dreading Cake. It was the Ziggurat.
I like the Dreading Cake. It was so.
Yeah, Law
name.
Described it as a wedding cake, and I called it a Dreading Cake because I can't not make puns, and that's the one that Alante remembers.
I'm pretty sure that's a Discord bit too. I don't think that was on the show.
Yeah.
I personally never get excited about anything. I was just.
Thanks.
I'm like very much on or off with commitment. It's either like. you know, people are like, will you come to the thing? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It could be. Sorry, I'm not. You should probably just assume I won't. And then the other option is like, yes, I am here until I die.
The fact that Sam never gets excited about anything is evident through the 90 episodes of the show that we've recorded so far. You can hear the lack of excitement.
I'm Sundere.
So Sundere.
I'm not sure for me at what point it like really clicked as a team. I know early on I felt like there was a lot of conflict between Harthax and Artyom specifically, and not knowing Zach very well, it was really like hard for me to
everybody at the table is like nodding and pointing at each other
for me to like extricate, like, do Zach and I really not get along, or do our characters just not get along? Because I don't know Zach that well.
I never told Zach about this, so this is like a Jerry moment, but early on, everybody, well, I guess it's two of them. These two came to me and were like, why is he like this? Does he hate us? And I was like, let me explain some things about Zach.
I've just been outed.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Yeah. It was really early on. I was just like, nope, Zach is a person who,
and then,
you know.
I think it was after I got back after the baby was born, when Artyom was really like upset with Harthax. And then like I listened to the other episodes and realized like how fond Artyom actually was of Harthax as a character. And then like Artyom and Harthax started to kind of bond, that I was like, this is actually like a really cool party dynamic of this weird, like, I think one of my favorite moments between the two of them was in Chimaris, yeah, when we were up on the volcano and you had like stormed off and you were like overlooking the city in the distance and you were really upset with everybody,
and I had just told Arvid to fuck off,
and you had just told Arvid to fuck off, and like Harthax really felt like they knew exactly where you were coming from and just kind of showed up like your weird shadowy like Jafar advisor to like to like coach you through, like, you know, how you doing?
So just so everybody knows, because most of you don't know me, I perform, but who I am as a person, I'm pretty abrasive. I'm pretty direct. I'm pretty aggressive. And a lot of people think I hate them. Like a lot of people think I hate them, and I don't. I don't at all. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I find most people annoying to one degree or another, but
I'm pretty sure you like being challenged, but you will like explode against it. You're like, yes, finally I get to do the thing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, when there's something I don't like, I like to argue with it. And then when it proves itself to be worthy, I'm like, yes, good. I accept. You have beaten me down.
Okay.
I get that a lot, especially in relationships where like they'll say something and I'll challenge them on it. And then they freak out because they're like, oh God, he's angry. And I'm like, no. Get back! Come on, let's do it. Tell me how I'm wrong. Not fighting, just passionate arguing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's been a few for me. I think it's different as the DM. I mean, like, I've been all in from the get go. Like, even the time before we started, and I got to like sit down and personally record a little bit of all your backstories, mm-hmm. and do those little one bit segments. I was immediately invested in the characters because I kind of talked through each of you about what was in your background and how you would let me introduce certain things to tie you into the main narrative.
Those have been really fun too.
I like to go back and listen to those once in a while. If you haven't listened to yours in a while, it might open your eyes for some stuff.
Yeah. Oh,
which one? I think I've had like three.
Well, I mean, at the very beginning, like the first four episodes, we released one per episode, mm-hmm. where it's just like, what happened before you joined the team? Those were great and emotional for me. I think one of my like most standout moments that like literally like just put chills down my spine, because it had the perfect synergy of like, okay, self-referential, you know, like an ongoing story. It was a player using like lines from other players, and it also involved world lore that I had written that you guys were playing off of, was when Harthax disappeared at the end of the Dornish sequence, and it was the Dornish goodbye. And I was just like, it was such a good moment because it tied the whole chapter together so well that it was like, it was a perfect scene in a story. Yeah. It felt good as a DM. There's been other moments, just that one in particular, I remember a very visceral response to feeling like this is good.
For me, honestly, and no offense to either of you two, Sam or Michael, it was actually when we were at the bar first introducing you to each other and having drinks or whatever. And when I realized that Alante was making everybody laugh and he was super friendly, and then there was after that, Law and I were doing a quick walk around being like, okay, so what are we thinking? We've auditioned people. We know what we're doing. And both of us almost in unison were like, well, obviously Alante. Like, we're getting Alante. That moment was when I realized we had something. I was like, yeah, this is it. Like, I think that when I realized that the team dynamic was going to be great, that we had some really great characters, really forward people, I was like, this is it. Here we go.
Don't feel too bad, Sam. You weren't at the bar with Alante while I actually was. So
Sam was at both of them, I think.
Were you?
She was at both auditions.
Yeah.
Wow, I was not very memorable.
Oh, there I was.
No, because remember, the second time was also because you had brought your friend.
Yeah.
You brought Katie, and she was great. And then, you were trying to take a back seat, so you weren't too forward.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, because I remember it was me, Alante, and another girl that didn't end up getting a part. But
Monica, she was great.
Okay. Yeah.
They were all good. Like, I don't think we had anybody who was bad.
I think she did art, too, right?
I don't know.
Oh,
she was drawing when we were there, yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I challenged Alante to a leg wrestle early on. I don't know if that was like the first recording or what,
did we do that? Oh my God.
We did.
Yeah. On a side note, can I just say, I really miss how we used to go to the Hilt after some of our recordings and just hang and have a few drinks and just chill. That was really nice. Yeah. I miss that area.
Yeah. Happened like twice. It was great.
I mean, hey. Early days. It's,
no, it was good. Very memorable.
Years.
We just need to hang out more, guys.
Yeah. Mm.
The golden years, as our podcast isn't quite two yet.
We hang out as much as we should be allowed to socially, though.
Can I just say, it's easy to forget that we've been doing 1 hour plus of content every single week, nonstop for a year and a half, actually a year and three quarters now. And what I want you to keep in mind, a standard television show is half an hour long at 13 episodes per season. A long show is 26 episodes at half an hour, and a very long, that is to say your sci-fi dramas and things like that, those are full hour at 26 episodes per season. We have had 90 episodes at more than an hour each nonstop for 2 years. We have beaten out for pure time run most American television.
Yeah.
And they're all so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, man. And that means because recording sessions are anywhere from like an hour and a half to some change after that, that means we've spent roughly 1 week unended in the same room together trying to create something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll do a couple more before we go to the mid break. This one is kind of a more DM related one. This is from Potato Coon as well. Do you ever earnestly set out planning your sessions to possibly kill or just be challenging but fun? And there's a lot of questions we can get about, you know, the pacing of the episodes, because combat is never what it's meant to be in D&D,
right?
The OUQ. You always have to have a finish line. As for that, the stat blocks that I put up against them are very challenging, and there's always the potential. Like, I'm pretty good at looking at them, being like, this is a threat in these regards. I know how much damage it can put out a round. And any of the threats they face could very realistically drop one of them or put the party, like, on their last legs. It doesn't always play out that way because we're on a very tight timeline. I like to give end goals to battles instead of just reaching zero hit points, because it helps move the narrative along and show that not every fight ends with killing something.
Yeah.
To the best of my ability.
You do a good job of building tension in combat.
But if we were to play out the encounters that I have prepared in full combat, these people would be like so tense every single fight. I've known historically as being the DM where like everyone's left with like two hit points or someone's unconscious. We just don't get the full playthrough in our context.
Yeah. But that's largely because we just don't think you guys want to listen to two or three episodes straight of one combat. Yeah.
Also because we're so rushed narratively, it also kind of it enforces that the characters can literally dump all of their big abilities on the first fight.
Yes.
And realistically just wreck something. So there's not a lot of pacing, which is this how it works. It's very cinematic and it matches the tone.
So I just want to follow up. How many of those combats have you turned into skill challenges?
I'd say historically, since the beginning of the show, there's been like three where I literally had to turn a fight into a skill challenge to make it fit for timing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say three. I'm not going to be married to that number because I don't remember perfectly, but that sounds right in my head. And this one I think will be fun to end on because it just sounds like a nice way to discuss things. This is from Reshbin, by the way. What does the MD's living area currently look like? What are their roommate rules for the MDs, and who is the worst offender of them? So like, you guys have had the lounge.
Okay.
You guys have had the lounge of ultimate questing for like a year now. So like, what do you see when you picture your area of it, and what do you guys do?
And correct me if I'm wrong, but even after all this time, we still all sleep in one communal room, right? We don't actually have our own bedrooms.
There's
yet.
There's partitions, faux walls put up, but it's one big warehouse.
Arvid is a messy boy, but it's like intermittent mess where when he gets to his room, it becomes chaos. But before he leaves it, it's nice again, or his area of the room, I guess. Probably doesn't pay enough attention to things like not getting mud on the floor or like mussing up the you know, walls with greasy fingerprints. And maybe he should take more care of what Morty is doing as well. But overall, not the worst roommate possible. Just a little bit forgetful.
RTM is guaranteed just the most Spartan person in the world. As far as he's concerned, it's a bed. It's a place where you sleep. I don't care about the rest. For him, there's no such thing as a living room. There's no communal space. It's just this is the sleep zone. Why do I give a shit? And so it's probably very clean and organized. And I guarantee the only thing he gets upset about is if somebody makes a mess that is potentially hazardous. Molds, rotten filth, anything like that. He's going to be like, stop it. This is how people die. Please stop.
I would say Chris's area is very lavish, of course. Lots of little silk things everywhere.
Beaded curtain to get in.
Oh my God, yes. Of course. But I think he's probably the worst roommate because he's probably loud singing to himself even if he doesn't notice and comes back at all kinds of hours at the night.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I also see his area just being like outfits like everywhere laid out, like figuring out. And then you just still wear the magic robe every time.
Right. Yeah. He's got
it changes color.
He's got two different chairs where, you know, you put something on and you're like, no, this isn't the outfit. And you can't hang it up because it's like it's only sort of clean. And it's just his
It'll
room
wrinkle.
Is just buried in half in like half worn laundry. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Harithax's area is probably not as Spartan as Artyom's, but their bed is probably very simple. And then they have a lot of like books and herbs, and so there's probably smells really weird, like a weird combination of like reptile medicine, herbs, incense, just like
just reptile cage and gin
kind of. Yeah. Probably
like,
yeah,
super herbal and like
right. Just a very odd like variety of experience, sensory experiences as you enter Harithax's space.
I can say with some confidence that Artyom cleans after everybody and he doesn't even think about it twice. Aww. To him, he's just like, there's a mess. It needs to be cleaned. I will clean it.
Yeah, I don't think Chris makes his bed ever.
I don't think Chris probably notices that Artyom cleans up all of Chris's messes. Like,
I'm guaranteed that all of you think that Maven paid somebody to clean for us, and Artyom's been doing it the entire time.
I was going to say Maven probably does pay someone to clean, but at some point they maybe stopped, or it's way less frequent because they go up and be like, someone already did the living room. Like,
ooh, yeah. And but then like that's why Artyom will come up to like Arvid and be like, you need to stop leaving half-eaten meat under your bed. This is just bad for you.
It's curing. It'll be ready in a month.
If I don't get it right under the center of the bed, Morty can get to it.
I could just see Morty like with his head on the side, like inches away from it.
Slurping away. Slurping.
Just gulping down dust bunnies.
Oh,
does Morty shed?
Yeah, he's a sheddy boy.
Oh, no.
It's not super bad because he's a short-haired mastiff, but like if you have like a black sweater on, you'll know.
Does Morty try to get into the garden? Like,
no, that's kind of locked off downstairs. And plus, he's probably not allowed downstairs like during business hours because he will steal food.
I imagine one of Chris's trysts walking up to them, pulling a hair that's the length of a full human hair off and being like, who's the bitch? And he's just like, it's a dog.
I like that.
All right. Well, I think that's a great midway point. We'll come back and we're going to ask some questions to each other so we can take a minute to think about those.
Woo!
Wow, you were great out there. Would you sign my shield?
Sure thing, kid. Oh, hi there. I'm Sir Miles Avendar, team captain of the Ivory Lions. I have to stay strong and confident on the field and off. That's why I'm here to talk to you today about mail problems. Chainmail, scale mail, plate mail, it's heavy, and it can be hard on your skin. You wear it in the tavern, you wear it in the dungeon. Hells, you'd sleep in it if the DM let you. But it doesn't breathe like linen. And after a long campaign of questing, you need to heal and rejuvenate your skin. That's when I reach for Helm & Shoulders Armor Ease Body Wash. Rinse away that tenacious leather funk, pauldron rash, and even soothe your adventurer's foot. It comes in three rugged scents: Elven Glade, Dornish Frost, and Nautical Mist. Don't let a high AC stop you from being cool. Get Helm & Shoulders today. Avoid getting hit, but not getting hit on. Right, ladies?
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey, all you cuties. We hope you're enjoying this LU Q&A because we sure as hell enjoyed recording it. So many of these fantastic questions were posted by our legendary patrons in the Discord, and we are so appreciative of both the engagement and their support, along with all the other Patreon subscribers, regardless of contribution. The legendary teams are The Ancestors' Fury, The Cultured Cutthroats, The Iron Rhapsody, The Tavern Brawlers, The Moonlight Vale, and this week's featured team, The Oathsworn, with Melissa Clem, Gemma Donnelly, Brandon Wills, and Patch Perryman. Thank you guys so much. In other news, Law just accepted a brand new position, and as such, his streams are going to be changing. This also means that our Soul-Link Nuzlocke will be changing. Tonight, he and I will be doing a sleepwalk of our current Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire stream, and then Law will be taking a break from streams until we get his schedule sorted out. So come join us tonight at 5 p.m. PST instead of the usual 6 for the big finale. We'll need some company, because this is going to be a long one. I'll still be doing my streams Monday through Thursday to keep things going. Spooktober is over, so I'll just be doing some variety streaming until I find the perfect fit. But enough out of me, let's get you back to the action.
Oh, what's wrong now, Gloria?
The party's in half an hour, and I've not prepared. I've just received word there'll be young'uns about, and I've not to entertain them. My punch is dreadful, and warmer than a dragon's tit. Eh, what? And now I have a mess to clean.
Pull your socks up, Gloria. Without hard work, nothing grows but weeds.
Oh, aye. I bet those high-minded fellows at the Arcadium.
Oh, aye. Wizard devilry could find a fix for all. But you're a simple-minded beast, Gloria. Best get the rolling up your sleeves.
There's got to be a better way. Boogery.
Hi, Willie Mage here with Presto Digitate, a cantrip in a can. Why succumb to the rigors of menial labor when you can use magic?
But I've not studied, and I can't find the time for it.
Transmute your cant into a can. Is your familiar getting too familiar with your new boots? Presto will remove that mess in a flash. Barely capable of pouring even the simplest of ingredients into a bowl? Chill, warm, or even flavor your punch in one fell swoop. Talentless and dull, lacking in the social skills necessary to function in society? Well, with Presto, you'll be the life of the party. Dazzle with showers of sparks or gouts of smoke. You can even prank your enemies with an eternity of broken wind.
My heavens, what in the hells is that smell?
Don't let little things like a basic understanding of the intricacies of the arcane energies and eldritch laws that hold our fragile reality together stop you from making your life easier. Get Presto!
Only 3 non-instantaneous effects may be active one time. Prestidigitate, the cantrip in a can, is not approved for use on living tissues. Exposure to presto may cause numbness, dry mouth, fever, the hunger, headaches, nausea, time shivers, diarrhea, a ringing in the ear which resolves into the brassy horns of the heavens heralding the dawn of the age of suffering, depression, restless leg syndrome, and a heightened awareness of the absurdity of the cosmos. Do not operate within 100 yards of any living creature which is pregnant or breastfeeding. Avoid use in the company of anyone under the age of 15 or above the age of 15. Contact your local retailer for details.
Welcome back to the next League of Ultimate Questions. We've answered some questions from the fans. Most of those were from our Discord and the LU Cuties. Thank you all very much for submitting those.
Love you.
And now we're going to go around and just kind of brainstorm and spitball some questions we have for each other. And then we're going to start with Alante.
Ooh, I have a potentially juicy one. If you had to play a different character at the table, so someone who's not you, who would it be and why?
Ooh, I love it.
That includes you too, Law. You're not exempt.
I hate it.
I would want to play Harthax.
Same.
I don't get to play a lot of warlocks. Also, I would have liked to try my hand at the Creole Dragonborn from the original idea, just because I've always wanted to practice Creole accents and I've never really had a good excuse to. And I'm like, I would have spent hours just drilling them in and drilling them and drilling them.
Yeah, Harthax is my first warlock character. I hadn't played a warlock in 5e. It's part of the reason I actually picked Harthax for what it was, is because it's one of the only classes that I hadn't touched yet. And I was like, that'll be fun. I'll play a new, because usually when I play, I try and play a class or something that I haven't done yet. It's part of the reason I didn't play sorcerers, because I played like 2 or 3 sorcerers already, because it's one of my favorite classes. Funnily enough, I actually think I'd probably play Artyom.
Yeah.
if I was to swap, I think that would be interesting. I do an okay Russian accent. I sound more like yeah, I sound a little more Chekhov than Artyom, but yeah.
I would have tried Haru too, because I like monsters and I feel like I usually try to do like an othery character.
Calling me a monster, Samantha?
Dun dun dun. I also really like dragons, like a lot.
Got that teratophilia, I get you.
Is that what that? Okay.
The monster.
Monster love.
Yeah, monster love.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, Alante, who would you play?
Oh. Honestly, I think I would play Arvid. Arvid
what?
Is just so lovable that I, you know, that's just the feeling that I would want out of the game.
I think you would make a cute Arvid.
That's probably true.
Now, the reason I wouldn't want to play, say, Krist, is because I find that there's a specific way I like to play casters. There's a specific kind of caster I like, and that's wizards. I like study. I like knowledge. I like pursuit of things like that. And to me, innate magic has always been really boring. Like, I don't know why. Like, I've never liked it. Sorcerers have always been just that class. I'm like, okay, well,
I don't think I could play Krist because of the British accent. I have... I always go
you
towards
change
like,
the accent.
I always go towards like fop, and Krist is kind of a more serious character than that.
I could definitely, like, if somebody else picked Artyom, I could definitely be a very sassy Krist.
Oh, I my believe God. It. Yeah.
Can you give us a little
what
bit
about
of that?
I don't know. Maybe we'll do a body switch episode at some point. you'll get to do that.
Don't give him ideas.
Sorry, I mean, we're really going to go with that trope? Like,
yes.
It is played out.
I mean, it's been 100 episodes and we haven't had a body switch yet. Like, our sitcom is due.
Which is a point of pride.
I will say body switch is way different in D&D than it is in a TV show.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's a lot more feasible.
You're right. That's probably one of the only reasons why I would be okay with a body swap in a D&D game.
What about you, Law? Who would you play?
Yeah. So here's the answer, but I'm going to lead into it. So I would have a lot of fun playing all 4 of them. I could definitely see how I would take it, what I would do to make it a little different, or how to like utilize their abilities in a fun way. But I think the one that draws me the most is probably Arvid. And I don't want this to be like offensive in any way, because I love the way you play your character. But sometimes you kind of fumble with numbers and knowing what you're capable of. And I really want to see Arvid do a full fight with someone who like really knows how to min-max each turn economy, because you could fucking devastate. Like, goddamn destroy. And I just want to watch Arvid like seamlessly know like all the potential that you have as this powerhouse.
Side note, what's a NPC that you would love to play in a game?
One of Law's NPCs?
Any NPC. Anyone anyone who has been in this show.
Oh, okay. I think it'd be fun to be Kip.
Is Disclip have a character class?
No, nope.
Don't answer that.
Yeah, spoilers. Oh,
I mean, I feel like my answer is obvious. So my obvious answer is Gastiel, just because you could be as crazy and trickstery as your heart could possibly want, and I, you know, that's not something that I get to try. But if it's not Castile, it would definitely be Maven. Just he has that mysterious, aloof air about him that I love.
I would go with Maven. And fun fact, my very first D&D game, when I was like a little kid sitting on someone's lap, they let me play, like, it wasn't written down or anything, but I was like a changeling character and I had so much fun. And that's like the thing I remember about it. I think that's a big part of me playing D&D or being in acting in general, is the idea of like this moldable being that, you know, you can be anything.
This might be super masturbatory, but I'd love to play Storm. I get to play him so much in The Voice, but I really want to play him in a game and just like
just want to look at his character sheet.
Yeah, I'm going to build him as a character because he's a rogue. He's not like, he sounds like a barbarian, but he's a fucking rogue.
I'm not the authority on this, but I picture him as like rogue with like a couple levels of fighter, battlemaster.
Exactly,
something.
He's a battlemaster rogue, and I just love the idea that he's just like this really tactical, really aggressive rogue who doesn't do sneak attacks. He does the give you disadvantage, stab you to death, and then kill the next guy.
He's a strength rogue, not a dex rogue.
Yeah, like, and I just imagine him moving through a room and being like, dead, 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 dead. And they're like, Jesus fucking, like, you know what I think? I think John Wick, except with a melee instead of ranged weapons. Yeah. Just mowing through them.
Storm would be fun to play, too. And as much as I love Philip, I wouldn't do Philip justice.
What class would Philip be?
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
No, he's just a kid.
Charlatan. He would just have a background. Urchin.
Next question. Oh, I was going to go this way, but we can do whatever. There's no uniformity.
Oh, I guess, yeah, that's true. We just finished Alante's question. My question probably won't take as long. If there were, like, Mortal Dawn team jerseys, what number would your jersey be?
72.
And why?
I've had a fixation on the number 72 for a very long time, so anytime anyone asks for a number, that's the one I answer.
Okay.
Fair sure enough.
That's not a good answer. I'm sorry. It's my favorite sports ball player's number.
I hate to say it, but it'd be one. Soul.
That's fair.
Get it? Mm. One.
I soul. Like it.
Sun. Whatever.
S-O-L, like the...
Yeah. The sun.
Man, I have to avoid the obvious number.
I fully anticipated the obvious number.
No, but, you know, I'm just going to be a little bit meta and just say 20.
Yeah?
Just say 20. I mean, all the crits that Chris has done over the course of this game, and he's a lucky boy.
Fair enough.
I like 20. Yeah, that makes sense.
I would have guessed 13, but...
Ooh. That's unlucky.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's challenging. It's like a F you to the bad luck. You're like, I'll wear it. Yeah. I got it.
Ooh, good.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think Harthax, I think, would probably pick a number that had some sort of like historical significance to them. Like... You know, how many dragon turtles came to Mackinac? Was it just one? Just the one?
Yeah.
Okay, that wouldn't work then. But it'd probably be something like that.
It'd be like the year it happened or something.
Right, you know. Otherwise, if I was just pick a random two-digit number, for some reason, 55 feels right for Harthax. Mm-hmm. But
if I'd pick random number, it'd be 17. 17 feels like Artyom. Hmm.
Can I ask a question?
That's the whole point.
That's kind of what we're doing.
Well, good. Where did Mackinar start when you started fleshing it out?
Where did we start?
Sorry, no. You. When you were creating this existing place, where did you start?
I started DMing when I was about 10 or 11. And, you know, for the beginning of it, you're just kind of like flying by the seat of your pants and telling a story. You're not thinking that much about the rest of the world. But it started with, you know, I got excited about cartography and drew a cool map. And that was a world called Zarna. And it was kind of fleshed out. I had like some cool cities and magic stuff going on. And then I decided I wanted to expand on it. So I decided that the planet or the center of that dimension was called Zarna, and there were lots of little land things on it. And I eventually started doing, I want to say it was my freshman year of high school, I started Mackinar, and it was originally the Mackinar Isles, and they weren't fully connected and it didn't really mesh with me. So they became one kind of landmass. It was Mackinar. And just playing campaign after campaign all through high school with my friends every weekend, 2 days in a row, falling asleep under the table, waking up and playing again. The content they created as players, I could just like, okay, you want to go here? So we're creating it on the fly as we go. And then at school, I would be not paying attention and taking notes about what happens in Alcara. And I'd say in the past 5 years, it's done like the most fleshing out as far as like really digging deep. I'm looking at the map and I'm like, what area doesn't have flavor? Like if I threw a dart at the board, I need to be explaining what you hit. So I'm trying to make sure in my mind, I know like what's in all the regions of the Five Kingdoms.
So wait, did the first game start in Alcara?
No. That's just like an example.
Okay.
I like to use Leone a lot because it seems very much like the high fantasy Arturian setting, but I love to diverge from there because it starts you with one picture in mind and then you get to see other cultures.
Yes.
So here's a question. We all are, well, I'm not going to say we, because I'm not a character in the game, but you all have your class build. If you had to multi-class next level, what class would you take for your character? Something new.
Oh man, a third class?
Bard, so I could start doing jingles. That's the piece, though, that you guys would have to agree to let me actually like do jingles, like you put in little.
Then you'd be a Drew Barbed.
Drew Barbed. That sounds amazing. Yes. So I could put it. We'd be like, oh, you're gonna cast.
Stop touching the table.
Well, stop touching your mic, buddy.
Fair.
Because I could, you know, bring the ukulele and you guys would be like, this is really not suited to podcasting. And I'd be like, but I want it. Okay, that's the whole thing.
I would definitely say fighter. The possibility of getting action surges and the ability to do more tactical stuff, like putting himself advantageously in certain positions. And like, especially action surge, because right now Artyom is just desperate for more action economy.
I like it.
Also, just because I feel like he's spent so much time in the off bits doing physical combat training that it's just kind of makes sense. It would benefit his already like tanky survivability.
Yeah.
Man, almost anything makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like it depends. Honestly, it depends how the story unfolds. But saying that, probably Warlock, since they have the celestial and like the darker stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like either I'm really out there to burn the world or I'm out there to save it or save myself. Like any one of these dynamics would add another dimension, Chris.
Honestly, I would have guessed rogue because it gives you extra combat viability outside of your spells and skill sets and like, you know, all that. Plus it fits with your new edgy theme.
I'm gonna ask a Michael question now that everyone else has answered. Does it have to be a cast I would mechanically qualify for?
I think that could be a consideration for sure. I think more like what sounds fun.
One of the things that I would think about for Harthax would be wizard, but Harthax isn't intelligent enough to multi-class into wizard, which is why I was asking. Having more spell slots, even just like a couple first level spell slots that I could burn on like the shield spell would make a really big difference for Harthax in combat. Cause I still at 9th level only have 2 spell slots and then I have to take a rest cause I'm out of spells. And that's mechanically tough to work with. It's like, as soon as I cast one spell, I have lost 50% of my combat viability outside of cantrips. Mm-hmm. And having like 4 first level spell slots as a wizard be like, cool. Bang. Hey, look at that. The only other one that I thought about for Harthax, I've thought a couple times about Paladin.
Yeah.
And taking a more like aggressive.
I like Paladin if only because you would then no longer be beholden to spells.
Right.
You could start being more combat viable on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be kind of cool to see Harthax multi into Paladin.
Yeah. Narratively, Warlock and Paladin play well together.
Because
there's one thing is like, okay, well, you're my patron. Then there's like, okay, I'm your ward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that a lot.
So, what is your greatest regret as a player so far in the game that you've made? What choice have you made, or what thing did you wish you had done, or something like that? And then the same question for your character. Let's start with the player question. What's your biggest regret as a player? What do you wish you had done?
Not as my character, just something as a player.
Like, oh man, I wish I had done more. I put more effort into this, or I wish I had done that, or I wish I had been more willing to X, Y, or Z.
I think I would have been more okay with all the conflict between Chris and Artyom in the beginning, you know, not knowing you or really being, you know, as into D&D as I am now. It was just a little bit much for me then.
I think that Arvid should have and would have been a better character if he had attempted to kill Artyom after the incident in the Maw, because he swore his sword, basically. So there's this piece of me that's really, really regretful that I didn't do that for my character who would have done that. Yeah, that was rough.
That sounds more like the your character regret, though.
Maybe.
It definitely sounds like character regret.
I think that's just the character changed from, like, I no longer was trying to be, like, this specifically honorable. But that is, maybe that's good because it's kind of a stereotype. The, I'm using air quotes here, so, but the honorable savage thing.
Yeah.
Noble.
Yeah, the noble savage.
Yeah, that's no good. So it's probably more interesting that he didn't.
Mm. Or that he valued the team over his oaths or over his pretensions to nobility.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, to me, that was the choice, is that you decided that this is my team. These are the people I chose to be with.
That's how I explained it away afterwards. At the time, I kind of felt like I was betraying my character for the sake of not being that asshole who tries to party kill, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm glad that nobody here has tried to infight. That's nice.
Yeah. As a player, I think I kind of wish that I had given Harithax a more tangible connection in world, with both of their parents being that, like, I tried to tie it into the lore around Dragonborn that Law did, but being tied to lore doesn't give me a really close personal connection to anything. And so with Harithax having no siblings and both of their parents being dead and growing up as isolated as they did, like...
And living as isolated as they did.
And
as
living
an adult,
as isolated as they did as an adult, it's like, you know, the only people that are at all close to them are the party members. There's nobody else in Harithax's life that even comes close to mattering. And I kind of wish that Harithax had somebody in the world that mattered to them outside of the three of you and, like, Maven and Morty.
Yeah. I think I, as a player, wish that I had taken a little bit more of a more comfortable backseat early on and been more aggressive about forcing you guys to talk up. I feel like the first few chapters read as like the Artem show and his friends, and I definitely wanted to, I kind of felt like I had to, and I don't think I did. I think I could have just encouraged you or fed you guys lines and, like, done that to kind of give you an opportunity to bring your characters out. And I think I just didn't do a very good job of being a producer / vocal leader in that regard.
Was it the first time for you, though?
What do you mean?
Being a producer / vocal reader.
Yeah, technically.
So you learned something.
I did learn something. I did grow a lot from it.
I was going to say, Sam, you can't just ask people that question.
But what's everybody's character regret?
I think much like Artem has, like, no guilt because he's all guilt, Chris feels like that about regret. But if I had to choose a regret, it wouldn't be Gastille. It would be not having, you know, the dancer from the ballroom, like, stay in the tavern with them and have, you know, a friend, someone to really confide in and feel, because Chris feels alone a lot of the time.
What? What's so funny?
I was trying to think about things that we've been through that Harithax really regrets, and it popped into my head. I'm like, Harithax is probably still mad they didn't get that fucking dark emitting torch out of it. Honestly, that's from a, like, a mechanical standpoint, that Harithax has so many abilities. They're empowered by being in, like, darkness, that having an item that would create darkness around them would be mechanically super useful. You know, I think Harithax's probably biggest character regret would have been taking their hand and going to see their patron, because that caused a pretty major, like, rift in the party for a little while. The group, who are the only people in their life that they'd really been close with, were very upset. And Harithax didn't really understand why, because it's like, this is a game. We're playing a game. Mm. And, like, I'm a servant of something greater than this TV show. But yeah. But as things kind of went on, Harithax kind of realized, like, this hurt you guys. And then I wasn't there for the whole, like... it's not Corvid sword, was it?
The Corvair sword?
Yeah, Corvair. I'm like, it was like the word for raven, but it wasn't. I was like not being there for that fairly important bit of, you know, the early adventuring life is probably something that Harithax does regret, of not, like, at least talking to somebody about it, even though it was a cool moment, like you were saying. Oh, yeah. The Dornish goodbye thing was cool, and I'm still kind of mad at Zach for not editing it the way that I had asked him to.
Oh, how did you ask it?
I asked you to like put in a pause and like a wind thing, and then have like after like a momentary pause. It would have added sound effects, but I thought it would have sounded cooler.
Yeah, I don't add sound effects.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
No unexpected sound effects.
Yeah, it would have like basically just making it three times as dramatic.
I'm happy to add sound effects in any meta, but in game I don't do sound effects. Right.
Can you play Yakety Sax right now?
No. That especially makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because their reward for it was mutilation too. Like, it's not even just it's not like you got to go and then came back with a cool power and just a cool power. Now you've got this gnarly ass freak hand and you're like, well, I'm definitely not more acceptable in social circles now.
I mean, to be fair, gnarly ass freak hand is my best magic item because it functions as a Rod of the Pact Keeper.
Fair.
But it is also like, I erased my light crossbow from my inventory because I realized I can't actually use it anymore.
Yeah, that tracks.
Okay, I could say that a player regret would be that I didn't, that during that bar fight scene, I should have given Arvid a little more. He could have done better.
It's kind of bread and butter for Arvid, right?
Should be. I mean, that should be his jam.
Bread and pocket butter. Your regret is not headbutting more things?
And I haven't yeeted anything in like several sessions.
My favorite thing about that is it's very... if you invert those two, they actually make perfect sense, that your regret as the player would be that you didn't try to kill me after the thing, but also that Arvid, very much in Arvid's head, I think they don't really understand the concept of regrets, and so for them, they would be like, man, I should have headbutted more people in that bar fight.
Yes! Yes, there it is.
Because Arvid probably doesn't even think twice about the whole, like, you know, not killing
no,
me for
gone.
The thing.
Yeah. It's it gone. Happened, it's over.
Law, do you have a regret as the DM that you, like, something you wished you had... that you had done or been able to do that you didn't get to?
There's so many actions minute by minute that I'm responsible for that it's going to be hard to isolate a few, but I'll kind of give an umbrella statement. Like, early on, I wish I had had a better understanding of how our timeline was going to need to work and knowing what I could prepare that we're going to have time for. And there are other regrets, I suppose, where I don't plan extra content, for an occasional chapter if there's less inspiration or more important topics, and it makes me maybe have to railroad you a little more just so we can get from point A to point B. Whereas in a perfect world, I'd have an extra 3 pages of like monster stats, notes, map stuff in case you guys go off track. But it's very hard to make sure you see the stuff in the story.
Is there a sneak peek into a dropped segment that you'd feel comfortable saying you wish you had gotten to use?
Yeah, let me think about that for a sec, because I'm sure there's several good ones. I mean, we really blew through Cult of the Maw. Like, that's a full module.
Yeah.
So there's a few things that happen inside the intestines. There was an NPC that I regretted not having time introducing in the Village of Kraw, kind of a crazy old merchant who trades with information instead of items. Hmm. And he's willing to, like, take things from you in order to trade random crap. He didn't really fit in the pacing that we had.
Yeah.
And there's like some fights in the intestines with some of the undead that had been like dejected from the society, and they instead were sent to be devoured and digested, but they kept fighting. So there was a whole bunch of creepy undead. It was kind of more of a moving quick to get through the stomach acid sort of thing. So that's a good example of ones where we objectively skipped some stuff.
Yeah. That's fair. For Artyom, his biggest regret, it's hard because his life is all about like these micro regrets, but also he tries to convince himself that he lives without regret too. So it's kind of this big issue. But I would say in reality, his greatest regret ever was leaving the Underdark.
Mm-hmm.
He regrets having done it, but he also knows that if he hadn't, he never would have been strong enough to ever do anything about it. So that's kind of like a big problem for him. Wow. Not because he like wishes, not because he feels guilty, but because he's like, I should have done the work there instead of doing it here.
Yeah, that came through when you were talking about your brother.
Yeah.
That when you left, he was a good boy, and now he's, like, you weren't there to stop him from becoming what he is now. That came through in your delivery of that.
And that's, like, the easy answer. Yeah. I think a harder answer would be part of him does kind of, no, he does not regret stopping that ritual at all. In the
no,
mall,
no,
not
no,
even
no.
A, not
that
even
was
for a
him.
Second. He's like, this was the right thing to do. He might have tried to steal from us. He didn't deserve to die for it. Man, actually, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, what's like a what's a less cheapo answer for that? Like,
did you share a, what was your player? Oh, your player regret was not letting us play.
Exactly. Not giving you more encouragement rather than guiding or just doing it myself.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been leading by example.
Shouldering it yourself.
The editing was brutal, and it would have what would have been required for us to have been a little more clear as people, characters in that time would have been a lot more editing. You would have had to let us take our time with things because you were really focused on like don't miss a beat, and if you do, I'm going to fill it with content.
It's possible
you would have had to do a lot more editing.
It's possible we wouldn't have managed every fucking Monday either because you would have had so much more editing to do of us pussyfooting around trying to figure out what we were gonna do instead of you just being like, all right, nobody's talking, I'm gonna power through this scene until you guys figure your shit out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, and the three of us were all pretty tentative the first two or three at least recording sessions of like not being sure like on mic what to do, because podcasting D&D is a different animal than just sitting down and playing D&D with your friends. I did not adequately anticipate how different playing on the podcast is compared to just sit at a table and play D&D with your friends.
Yeah.
Honestly, I have a different take. I feel like this is infinitely easier than playing it at a table with people. I've been in situations where like an NPC comes up and the DM's like, so what do you do now? I'm like, I don't know. But somehow remembering that there's an audience out there listening, you're like, all right, yes. If you don't know what to do, play for the audience.
I'm betting a portion of that is that Law is the DM here.
Yeah. But also keep in mind that at a table, a moment passes and somebody steals it from you and you never get it back. In this, we give ourselves a little bit of leeway where it's like, actually, can I say a line real quick? Because I feel like this would have been really good.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's definitely a thing. So one thing that I think I finally decided for regret, and this is going to sound weird, but I think RTM regrets not immediately striking Maven down.
What?
The moment he realized that Maven was whatever Gosmeriel was talking about, because he felt the thorn stab his hand and the vibration of it, and he was like, oh, this is what she was talking about. I think part of him still regrets not immediately doing what his gut told him to do, which is kill him.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, it's like if he had done that, all of Luck might have not happened. Like, I mean, like what would have happened to the team? Whatever.
Would have had a different patron maybe, but like.
Oh, I was fully prepared for that to be a combat.
Yeah. So in my heart, I was like, I think RTM still, like every time he sees Maven, part of him says, kill him.
Ooh.
In a different way than it says that about the other two. I'm sure he doesn't want to kill us. I just.
No, and I believe that to be true when I roleplay Maven interacting with RTM. There's always just like this kind of invisible tension because that scene happened. And Maven would not beat you guys in a fight, not by any stretch of the imagination. But he. I believe could successfully escape you.
Yeah, that tracks. Oh.
He's got some tricks when it comes to subterfuge and GTing the FO.
Pocket sand, bat form, go, shusha.
Or, oh my God, it's you. You're fighting Artyom. Who's the real one? You got a crossbow. Which one's the real Artyom? Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed listening. It was really nice kind of digging our teeth into the game, the story, the characters, and getting a few peeks behind the DM screen. That's always a delight for me. I guess we should do the full outro. I did the last one. I wasn't even thinking about it. So I'm going to pass it off to Sham.
Okay. I probably shouldn't read from this, actually. So thank you for listening. You know, we go live every fucking Monday.
That we do.
Woo! Every fucking Monday.
And if you want to find links to our different available platforms, you can go to our main platform, which is the LUQ.com.
That's the one.
And thanks for questing with us and growing with us. Let's go around the table. I'm Sam. I play Arvid Ulfmund.
I'm Michael Loving. This episode, I played Michael Loving, who plays Harthax.
Hi, I'm Alante, and I play Chris Segrand.
I'm Zach Barkas. I play Artem Volkov. I'm also the technical director for Slapdash Studios.
My name is Law. I'm the dungeon master and the creative director of Slapdash Studios.
And together, we all wish you luck.
Woo!